I'm Tommy Gimler.
Whistles were blown an average of every 22 seconds in Monday night's national championship game, one in which North Carolina eventually won 71-65 over Gonzaga, a game that once again proved it doesn't matter how much research you put into the game of college hoops, it's just whether or not you put your money on the same outcome that the refs did. The defense rests.
And I'm Justin Gilbert, and the Cubs are back to 500, so let's drink to that.
I'm happy!
And in other news, I'm the fabulous T-Shawn, and if you're a golf lover, you would love the Doobie Open. Fuck you, Augusta. Puff, puff, pass, baby.
The Daily Upper Decker. Nothing but sports and crap.
All right, gentlemen, welcome back. We're going to get this started with the Doobie Open talk. Big fan of that, Doobie Open.
I mean, who doesn't love that?
So because you were racing cars down in Mexico, you missed the greatest golfing event of the year that we do to basically outdo the Masters, basically. You know, it's always the second weekend in April that the Masters hit CBS and ESPN now. But, you know, the Doobie Open is really the biggest event of them all, where eight of us go out and take some kind of herbage, doobage, whatever you want to call it, and then hit glow-in-the-dark golf balls at Westchester Golf Course for 3.5 hours.
Sounds wonderful. Is it sponsored by John Daly or...
Sponsored by? No, it's not. I mean, we're going to bring in the sponsor. It's a maturing concept, you know, Tommy's dream, and that's in quotes. It's and for real, actually. So no, there's a wait. This was our this is our second stab at it. The first one was truly, I think, like kind of rudimentary and testing, and this one was a more mature version. And I think we'll have a grander event.
So it's always evolving, I mean, becoming.
It's the Darwin child of motherfucking golf tournaments, man. Just chewing up those who are weak.
I was happy. I forgot about. I didn't even know who president was. I didn't even know who the president of the United States was at that point. I was just on cloud nine. It didn't matter. That putt might have just missed, or a little rim job around the circle right there. But I'll tell you what, in my mind, it went in, and that's all that mattered. There was no bringing me down. There was no bad trip at that point.
Yeah, there's no rim job that brings you down.
No, sir. I think that was like the foreword in my first book. Yeah. There was no rim job that brings me down. Now on to Revelations 3:16.
What was the score of, what was the showdown? There were only two teams in this particular tournament.
That's okay. You don't need a lot of teams. Right. No, it was -5 to -3. We only got 13 holes in. Now, if we would have done the 14th hole, then it would have been -4 to -3 because we parred the par 5 and you guys bogeyed number 14. But at that point, scores, it didn't matter. We were 8 men who were 1 without being gay.
And that's hard to do.
It is. We were 8 men who turned into just 1 happy family.
Were we in like a big bed? It was like an oversized kind of like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory kind of bed, like where all the grandparents slept.
That sounds like your trip was a little bit better than mine. You might have mixed a couple more things than I did, but I was...
Large circle, spiraling bed.
Well, I was in a happy place. You know, Grandma was not making out with Shooter McGavin with a big Gene Simmons tongue. That's for sure. There was the chick in the 90 with the two pitchers of beer in her.
Were there midgets, though?
Sure. There were midgets.
Oh, you always need those midgets.
I love midgets, man.
Oh, I thought they were just standing far away. I don't know.
The hot man.
So, guys, 44 penalties. If that's what you want to call them. It doesn't sound very official if we're a sports blog and we're calling it penalties. 44 personal fouls were called in the NCAA championship game, one that UNC finally won 71-65. They figured it out. It was an average of every 22 seconds the refs would blow the whistle. I think they said that the game went more than a minute without stopping once. Once it went more than a minute without stopping due to some kind
that's
of
poor.
Whistle
that's,
being blown.
That's like Italy versus Spain in soccer.
We don't talk about soccer.
I know that was taboo, sorry.
So if you went back and you watched the game, you were down in Mexico racing cars.
Correct.
Sucking dust.
But they were just so many calls. Like it was just foul after foul after foul after foul. And there was even one point where they called a flagrant foul on the big Pollock on Gonzaga.
Something with a ski, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly. So they called a flagrant foul, and I think they hit both of them with a flagrant foul.
Somehow they both had it. Yeah, it was the weirdest decision, and it took them like a real time kind of 12 minutes to figure this out. Like they just couldn't. And in my mind, and this is from a, you know, an old school Big East fan, but I think that's a play on. Like that's a loose ball. You know, some hands went the wrong places, but you know, no harm done. So let's just play on. Let the guy, whoever, if the ball went out of bounds, I guess it must have, right? But you know, whoever it went off of, all right, it's the other team's ball. Fair enough. Let's move on.
Right. I mean, but based on the way they'd already set it up, like they had to call something at that point. But the fact that they went back, like he said, talked about it for like 10, 12 minutes, and then finally had to give an explanation about it. Like it still wasn't clear what they were doing, so they literally had to explain themselves. So then there was the flag and foul there, and then they were making all the calls, and just every single thing was a foul here and blowing the whistle here. And then with less than a minute left and North Carolina up one, they miss, obviously, that Kennedy Meeks has his hand out of bounds while he's touching the ball, and they call a jump ball. So supposedly you see every single ticky-tack or like nickel and dime foul, except you don't see the one where the dude who has the biggest hands and the biggest arms on the court, you don't see his big black arm sitting out of bounds, and instead you're just jump ball. And that one you don't go back and review.
Yeah, I mean, a big black hand on a white line, you should be able to see that.
All right.
That's what you get for sucking dust all week.
What is it? Is it flagrant or flagrant?
I like the way Tommy says it.
Sometimes I go to Vegas. You guys want to go to Vegas? Flagrant?
I'm not even going to try that word after Tommy's butchered it, but I enjoy the mellifluous way in which he says it. I think that's dynamite. But I'm with you, man. Like it's a strange find. I mean, here's what I'm gonna talk about something on the more gratuitous end of the kinder
what,
end.
What does that mean?
Kinder. Yeah, okay. I know, right? I know our particular audience is of a certain ilk. But I mean, I actually thought all the kids played extremely hard. It was very competitive. You know, not everyone was clicking, but everyone was working really, really hard out there. I realize it's a championship game. Everyone should, but like part of why the play wasn't always so spectacular is because both sides were working so hard, right? Like they were working hard to stop the offensive player. So it's just, you know, shit was clunky, but I kind of appreciated it from that nose to the grindstone kind of flavor that I like, and it was definitely, especially early on, not the pretty. And of course, right, like you mentioned, like the rhythm of the game was all fucked up because of all the fouls.
I'm trying to find here are the referees, if we can remember this: Vern Harris, Michael Stevens, and Michael Aides. E-A-D-E-S?
Eads.
Michael Eads.
I know you're drawn to these.
Who is the actor that I was like, you know who's a really good actor? And I was like, Cary Ewells. And these guys were like, who the hell
guy.
Is Cary Ewells? Yeah. And how do you pronounce his last name?
Elways.
Is it Elways? Yeah. I always thought it was Ewells, too.
Yeah, that's also hilarious.
Princess Bride, Men in Tights. Yeah.
Yeah. And the funny part is I was on the road somewhere trying to have a conversation with somebody seriously about this one time, and I was like, Cary Ewells is unbelievable. And he probably just said, he was just kind of like shook his head like, yeah, he is. And he didn't even have the decency to tell me, like, I think it's Elways.
No. Cary Ewells is just like a minor leaguer in the fucking Brewers system, man. Like, that's... He might be there now still. Like, I think he's been like 13 years.
He sounds like somebody who's got like two Deweys up in Winnebago County or some shit like that. Cary Ewells, watch out for that guy. Cary Ewells, you know I'm not supposed to serve you this
Always
beer.
Ubers to the game.
Cary Ewells doesn't know how to use Uber. So Vern Harris, Michael Stevens, and Mike Eads.
Okay.
Those three should never be allowed to referee a championship game ever again, much less like any game that matters. At a certain point, get them out of the tournament. Like what I'll do is I'll go through and I'll look at their history. If I can find like a somewhere online where you can look at their history. But those three guys should not be allowed to ever referee a game of that magnitude ever again.
Did they get demoted to like women's basketball? Is that what you're suggesting?
Sure. That'd be a great demotion.
NIT?
You're that or just tell them like, hey, we're upgrading you guys. You guys did so great. We're promoting you to the pros. WNBA this season. WNBA, here you go. That's beautiful.
WNBA D-League.
Moving on here in the hot mess, speaking of like a terrible refs, did you guys see John Higgins? So I was talking to you about this off mic. John Higgins was the referee in the Elite Eight game between Kentucky and UNC. One where I was talking to Justin, he made so many bad calls against Kentucky in the first half that to me it was obvious that he and his posse or his thugs or whoever his friends are, they were all betting UNC in the first half.
Well,
because he didn't call the game like that in the second half. There were just so many. Is it egregious?
Yeah, egregious
was.
Yeah, that's
good. Okay, that's good. Word.
Yeah, all right. For people in Oshkosh, what does egregious mean? Erroneous?
Bad.
Bad. Okay. Yeah. All right. So there are just so many bad calls. Like there was one where the ball was obviously coming out of the cylinder. It was below it. Like the guy's hand was below the cylinder to touch the ball.
Oh, those were unbelievable. Those calls.
When you lose by 2 points at the end of the game, those are 2 points right there.
Well, they made two of those calls too.
In
two
the first half,
offensive like goaltendings, which. Wow, it was kind of astounding. I will say that is the difference in this game from what we were just commenting on, though. Like for the most part, there wasn't a tremendous imbalance in who was getting the calls in the championship game. Like ultimately, you're right. That one key call, you know, with the hand out of bounds. All right, so that clearly favored UNC. But in this game, I felt like You know, I hate to agree with all your conspiracy-like thinking, but in this case, it's like, no, we've got our SEC team. We really need a team from our best league, the ACC.
Where basketball is life, yes.
And, well, and of course, you know, UNC with the, you know, the national following.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, hey, it would really kind of suck if we lost that and we had, you know, fucking South, you know, like Gonzaga, South Carolina. Like, who gives a shit about these teams? You know? So I feel like there was a little bit of that at play, and that may be because I just talked to you way too much, and it's just
and you lost so much money betting that you're like, oh my god, this is starting to make sense. But if you looked at like the first half and the second half, like he didn't make the calls like that in the second half necessarily. It was just obvious to where if UNC was a 1 point to a 1.5 point favorite in the first half, like they were, he especially even like late down the stretch with only like 6 seconds, he called a foul on Kentucky just to make sure that it wasn't like an and one. And I was telling Justin that he was making calls from all the way on the other side of the court.
Pet peeve of mine.
The Kentucky announcers. Now, granted, they're biased because they're rooting for the other blue, for you know the Kentucky blue that's out there. But they really made good points, and all of a sudden, like you could just see them getting frustrated or hear them getting frustrated. And they're like, it's that same guy again, John Higgins. So they mentioned on air that John Higgins, they hated him so much on air, so they mentioned that he had his own company. So what the Kentucky fans did is they went and found his John Higgins Weather Guard Incorporated, which is like a roofing company in Omaha, and they started giving him so many bad reviews.
On Yelp,
On Facebook, to where
it
was
Yelp too. No,
I didn't see whether or not he had a face. Yelp page.
They were thorough. I think.
They did everything.
They used proper social marketing for sure.
So at one point his Facebook rating was all the way down from like almost 5 stars down to 1.2 stars. Now it's back up to 3.7 because I think everyone, even if you weren't watching a game, like people feel sorry for the guy, so they're going on there and just giving him 5 stars. But there were so many posts on there like, you know, John Higgins, you know, if he fixes your roof like he officiates an NCAA game, expect to have a house that's flooded and shit like that. But there was one guy, now again, I don't know who Ron Hargrove is, but he looks like an old man with nothing better to do than just check stats. Here's what he had to say about it. He said, UK has a win ratio of 83% if Higgins isn't a referee and 37.5 if he is. So UK has a tournament win rate of 81% when Higgins isn't a referee and 25 when he is.
Oh, man, how many games is that, though? Like, what are we talking about?
So you have to say 37.5, maybe that's 8 games.
I feel like this guy's ref a ton of their fucking games.
3 of 8, right?
Yeah.
3 of 8. So, yeah. So maybe it could be 3 of 8. They could be 6 and 10.
But he's like a Big 12 ref, right? Like if he lives in, wherever you said, like Oklahoma.
He lives in Omaha, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, Nebraska. So he lives in Nebraska. So he's not even part of the comp. So I'm just saying, though, like, that's an amazing number of times just to have reffed their games if he's not even in their conference.
That simply cannot be a coincidence, he's saying. But all I'm saying is that if you watch the first half, if you can go back and find some highlights on it, like it's atrocious how many bad calls that he makes, and it's just him making it. So to me, at that point, it was just so obvious that there was some kind of
like at the
they were down five, I think.
And they definitely might have even been closer than that at half, but like they should have been dominant in that half, which obviously changes your whole disposition going into the second half, right?
Well, here's another guy who says this guy has cost the Wildcats the 2011 NCAA championship game, the 2014 Final Four, this year's Elite Eight, and this year's Kansas game. Even has called five technical fouls on Coach Cal in eight games that he's reffed.
Wow.
So the eight games.
That is.
Eight games.
Those are some revealing stats, you know.
So it's ridiculous. So some of the, but I do think that it's overboard if you're going, if you're a Kentucky fan. Again, it is and it isn't. Like, I get it. If you're a Kentucky fan and you're watching this game, something's up with this dude. And you know what the NCAA did after that game? They gave him a Final Four game.
That's amazing.
He reffed the South Carolina-Gonzaga game after butchering so many calls in the Elite Eight game. They rewarded him with a Final Four
game. Do they have, like, committees that grade, like they do in the NBA and NFL, they grade?
Apparently not,
yeah. Because you'd have to see that something was up.
Unless, I could only see, like, if Kentucky would fill out, like, a formal complaint and just say, like, hey, go back and look at this, how many calls did he miss? But either that or, again, the NCAA, it wouldn't surprise me if it's just one huge sham and they're just all, everyone involved is just making so much money off this, because these games, when you look at them, so many of these point spreads are so close. And I get it with all the information that's out there. There's so many, computers and simulators now that these touts in Vegas that they put they'll simulate a game 150 times and they'll say, okay, well, here's the spread at this many times, like UNC won, so they're a 2.5-point favorite or whatever. But so many times it comes down to where the spread. Look at that Wichita State-Kentucky game. The spread was 3 points. And Kentucky, like, missed some free throws at the end, and Wichita State hit a last-second two-pointer to where it pushed, where it was right at three. And it's starting to happen in the NCAA tournament games too many times, where the over-under is 153 in the Oregon-UNC game in the Final Four. And UNC gets fouled, comes up to the line, misses a free throw. They get an offensive rebound, get fouled again. Miss the free throw, so it stays at 153, so they don't have to pay out any over bets.
Yeah, I mean,
which 70% of the public bet the over in that game.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like half the time the spread is right there, but if it's like 70-80% of the time the spread's like right there, it's something seems a little up.
It seems to happen more during the NCAA tournament.
When all the viewers are watching.
When people are actually watching college basketball and actually betting money on college basketball. Yeah. You're right. Some of the reviews.
John Higgins.
Some of the reviews left for John Higgins. I am very disappointed with the services of this roofing company. They were rude and slow. They also hired numerous undocumented illegal aliens who stared at my daughter sunbathing the entire time they were working. Very creepy. The shingles were crooked and leaked from day one. The roof has as many holes in it as the games that the owner of the company referees. Mr. Higgins is a poor moral fiber, and I hate to say that this company follows suit. Very poor. Sad! Exclamation point. Nick Sally, 1 star. I would just like to hear you say that you made some really shitty calls.
Well, here's something, and I may even have to credit you for this particular line of thinking, but it's part of me was like, well, that's kind of shitty. You know, you've now taken this, you've taken this guy to task as part of his livelihood. Now you've taken it, beyond basketball. I'm like, that's fucking with his money. But fact is,
he fucked with my money.
There we go. So it was you. Yeah. You were the one who told me. Yes. And so I'm like, no, he's I think he's like, he fucked with money in general, right? Like it's, any number of these players, that could affect their draft status, what they make, and like, there's just layers of things he affected financially as well. So, I mean, do we feel bad for him?
Not at all. That's why I was kind of like, God, you guys are going overboard, kind of like, let it go, but don't. Like, you can't just say, hey, he made a couple of mistakes. Because if you're going back and looking at it now, that's pretty ridiculous that in eight games that they're 3-5 with him, but the rest when he's not on the court, they're winning 83%. Now, granted, some of those games, it's Kentucky against Northern Kentucky or Eastern Kentucky or Western Kentucky,
Northeast Western Kentucky.
Yeah. Here's another one. One star. This guy put the gutters on upside down. He is clearly blind. After I saw the NCAA game with UNC and Kentucky, I realized the man is blind. Realized spelled incorrectly. Made multiple calls while not facing the play. When he hears footsteps, he goes crazy on that rape whistle. Let's see. There's another great one here.
See, I feel like some of the, like that guy just was not covert enough as an authentic review. I think that was, that he's using it like a comment section as opposed to a review.
Yeah, it would clearly
like,
be like well,
commenting
this is,
on a blog article or something.
It's just a pissed off fan. This isn't actually someone.
Like,
that
come on,
got
buddy. Step
done.
It up. Like that's you're just you wasted time there. I think
this is my favorite one, and then we'll move on. John personally came out to fix my roof. I'll say this guy was very professional. He hit on my 13-year-old son and clogged my toilet, didn't tell anyone. I tried to get him to come back and finish my roof. He agreed to come back the following day. When he finally showed up 3 hours late, he smelled like tequila and strippers. His attire for the day was glitter and a tank top. I personally have never dealt with such a simple-minded person. When my roof was finally fixed, in quotation marks, he overcharged me and even tried to put his tequila and stripper bill on my bill. That was funny. So right. At least if you're gonna go there, right?
No, yeah. I mean it's obviously a little embellished his yeah. particular brand of description, but he did get very creative, and he committed, which I
but
appreciate.
You know to close it out though, if you're the NCAA, you can't just say like at that point you have to look at the tape and you have to say like why are so many Kentucky fans losing their mind? Yeah, are they simple minded people? Every fan base of every team is right. They hate to lose. When you put that much time and effort into watching your team and you watch one guy make that many mistakes, they're going to be pissed. So when you just turn around and shove it up their pee holes by giving him another game in the Final Four, like, come on. That's just, it shows that you really, really don't give a shit about your product that's out there. So why should we give a shit about John Higgins' product on the roof?
Well, and also, like, the three most corrupt sports is, like, the IOC, soccer, and college.
And the NCAA.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's
and John Higgins Roofing,
John Higgins Weather Guard Incorporated. All right, moving on here in the hot mess. We'll talk about this briefly because I think we have to talk about it. But
oh,
Patrick
think,
Ewing is
yeah.
the new head coach at Georgetown.
That's fun.
Your
yeah.
thoughts? I mean, like, is this
Mr.
a big deal?
Mr. Snuffleupagus himself. Yeah. and for those of you who don't know, it's a great tale told by local favorite Barry Murphy here. It's his story, so I'm not going to steal it. But he did see Patrick Ewing naked once, so that's...
Oh, yeah, that is on a Dudcast. It yeah. is recorded.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Okay.
So he just one time just came in there. He was asked to, like, hold the tape recorder.
Right,
and just
he was
get
an
there.
Intern yeah. with the Bulls and when the Knicks were playing them. And, yeah, and Ewing was just standing there. And yeah,
huge. He's blessed.
Sure,
yeah.
it was
he's blessed.
Quite the
yeah.
sight to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of a sudden, one guy like bumped him and was like, "Hey, kid, we don't do that here," because he's just staring at how big it was.
Well, of course, right? Like, you know, Ewing's hips are kind of like shoulder height for us, right?
Yeah, right.
So it's kind of right there. So, it's kinda,
no, kid,
you know.
He doesn't talk out of that thing. Don't hold the tape recorder up to it.
He doesn't talk.
Hold it up. I know it looks like it can sing a hell of a tune, but you're not going to want to hold the tape recorder up there.
Don't get him excited, dude. That's the thing that hit you in the chin. Anyway, all right. So, yeah, let's go Coach Ewing.
You'll poke your eye out, kid.
Coach Ewing.
So is this a big deal? To me, like, not knowing, because, again, Georgetown Hoops has been, I wrote on here that it's been irrelevant since I started growing hair on my beanbag.
So
they're the team that lost to Florida Gulf
it
Coast
took
as a number
you to
two.
Iverson to grow some hair on your nuts?
I might have had some by then. Yeah. That's all right. I was a late bloomer. But the but to me, it's like they've been irrelevant so long. Is this the one guy that they could have hired to actually, like, I feel like there's players who idolize him and are going to be like, Patrick Ewing, I'll go play for him. Just like people were like, I'll go play for John Elway in Denver.
Oh, man, I don't know. He might be over. For this kind of guy, you know, like a rejuvenator of a program like this, he might be too old. Like, think of the coaches that are getting hired now. They're all, like, fucking 31 years old.
Right.
You know, like, he is...
They're sophomores in school.
He's, like, nearly 2.5 times the age of the kids coming out of out of school now that he's got a recruit. They really don't... I mean, they've heard of his name.
Man. Yeah, they never. These kids never.
And everyone shoots the three now. Like, who is he? Like,
well, they never seen him play. I mean, yeah. They're all like these 17, 16-year-olds that are being recruited. They haven't seen Patrick Ewing play.
It wouldn't even matter. They'd be like, that dude just does not play like me, right? Like, he's grabbing rebounds, and I just want to shoot from 25 feet. So, you know, this guy doesn't understand me.
I don't. I think he's actually going to be okay. I think some of the boosters are going to contribute a little bit more money to pay for some good players to come on in. I think as long as he doesn't shower with the kids, I think they're going to be just fine. I think they're going to enjoy playing for him. Moving on here in the hot mess, speaking of old, Tony Romo is retiring, guys. Big story here. I would say the most pissed off people in America right now are Houston Texans fans because he was supposed to come there and sling the ball for them and lead them to the Super Bowl and everything. And instead of doing that, he's going to go replace Phil Simms at CBS. So no doubt Broncos fans are very happy about that. Well, they actually started a petition 2 years ago to get him off of their games.
Phil Simms, just for the fucking life of me, I couldn't understand why he just would just disparage us so much. I just was like, God, that's one side. Talk about a fucking John Higgins treatment. God damn, Phil Simms would just crush us. So, yes. Here's the thing. Can Tony do this? Like, he's a charismatic, nice guy.
I think the internet, they're already all over him, like Twitter, Facebook, Snapface. They're all over Tony Romo already. Like, every move that he does, they already have an opinion. I cannot wait during week one when he makes the first mistake. When he makes his very first mistake, there's going to be memes. There's going to be everything. It's going to be up there. But I honestly think that he's already been through so much shit from either dating Jessica Simpson or, you know.
That's true.
Yeah. No, that was Mark Sanchez. Dropped the ball on the field goal attempt in Seattle. He was an asshead fumble right there.
He still nearly scored on that play.
He did.
I
know. A lot of heart.
He still tried. I mean.
But I think he's already been through enough to where he's so even like this year Dak Prescott is, you know, playing out of his mind, and he's got to sit and just take it. So I think he's become so thick skinned that he can take it, that he'll do it. It's just going to be, I think, a learning curve that they're going to throw him in. Like, they almost need to put him into like some kind of advanced, like uber advanced announcing school right now. And like have him like sit in front of games and just call games. And then just rip him a new one. You can't say that. You got to be quicker. You got to say this.
No, they've got to. They have to do it. Like, his own training camp. And, I'm with you. It's the only way to do it. Because if you haven't done it, it's an unusual skill. You think, oh, that's just fucking easy to talk about the thing I've done for my whole life.
Right.
But it's not. That's not the way that kind of performance and the way TV works, right? Like, it is challenging. You can get a little starry-eyed in the moment.
Well, here's my belief. I honestly think somewhere, again, conspiracy theorist Tommy Gimler here, I think that somewhere along the way, Jim Nantz got sick of Phil Simms farting in his face in this 4x6 booth that they're in. And I think he actually put a good word in for Tony Romo. I bet you they were on the golf course somewhere, you know, sometime during the year. And he was just like, hey, man, what's it going to take to get you to come replace Phil Simms? Because it is noted. There are videos all over the place of Phil Simms like farting and like putting it in Jim Nantz's face. It was just in the Steelers playoff game this year.
Yeah.
He did it.
Nantz was like, oh, Tony, you're mostly vegetarian, huh?
It's pretty fibrous.
Pulls out his little back pocket list of possible, you know, co-anchors. Yeah, there you go. Someone just struck gold right there.
To interview for the job, you have to sit in the same room with Jim Nantz for 3.5 hours. And they just count how many times.
With like a buffet there. Yeah. And then it's like, you know, and you have to keep eating. And there's like mac and cheese and like. Weird.
Yeah,
weird.
You have to go to breakfast in the morning at like the Waldorf Astoria, wherever you're staying, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's outstanding. All right, so anything else? Are you excited as a Broncos fan?
I think as just as a football fan. Like, look, you know, Phil gave it a whirl, but I'm happy to not have him commentate. But, you know, I root for Tony. Tony's the consummate underdog because of, you know, it's his whole professional football story, right? It's like, he comes from like Division II, his school. Like, he wasn't even
Eastern Illinois. Yeah.
So, you know, he comes from there. He's, you know,
Jimmy Garoppolo, Sean Payton.
And undrafted, right?
Probably. Because, again, he went to Eastern Illinois.
Yeah. So, you know, he's got a whole great tale. And like you said, like, he has handled a lot of whack shit thrown his way. And you know, sustained. And he's had to actually, you know, in overcoming all of the injuries, right? Like, and so he has to hear more that not only does he can't win, he just gets too hurt to even play.
Right.
So anyway,
I like it. Well, hey, we're gonna move on here for time reasons. We're gonna get going into every year we like to do this. It's the special. This is a special to the Daily Upper Decker podcast. Again, you can find us every single day on dailyupperdecker.com. You can also find us on Facebook, on Twitter at Daily Upper Deck. This year, just like we have the last couple of years, the Daily Upper Decker is going to cover the 2017 Masters.
The 2017 Masters.
So we're speaking of Tony Romo's future partner, Jim Nance.
Jim Nance.
And Jim Nance will be covering the Masters for both ESPN and CBS this week.
Amen.
We have our own Jim Nance here, although I think you're more talented than Jim Nance. Your voice is more soothing than Jim Nance's. And I've always said that the fabulous T-Shawn has a million-dollar voice. So what I did is I came up with four things that I would like you to read, and we're going to play the Masters theme music that you provided underneath it while you say this, all right? So this is the fabulous T-Shawn, and this will qualify as our coverage of the 2017 Masters here at the Daily Upper Decker. Playing the part of Jim Nance, the fabulous T-Shawn.
Dustin Johnson will sadly miss this weekend's Masters after falling down a flight of stairs at his Augusta rental home. I'll tell you what, Vern, I'd like to show his wife my three-fingered putting grip. Or maybe even shove my five-iron up her twat. Once again, the Masters is brought to you by Coca-Cola. It was reported last week that Phil Mickelson recently lost $1.95 million to a professional gambler, something that sounds almost as awful as Phil Sims dropping ass in a 4x6 announcing booth with zero ventilation. Here's to you, Phil. Hello, friends. The 2017 Masters is brought to you by Samsung, Toyota, and at least 12 other goop companies. I'm telling you, Vern, they're really taking over this sport, aren't they? I suppose, though, as long as it's not the Jews. Let's check in on Rory, trying to finish up on 14. Let's look back at Jordan Spieth's trouble at the 12th a year ago. Two shots in the water, followed by a three-putt. I was talking with Heinrich Stenson about it this week, and he said it was the funniest thing he's seen since Dallas Buyers Club.
That's beautiful. That's what I've got. Those are the four things that came up.
There we go. Very good. Well, you know, there's actually a late sponsor that's come in for our Masters.
I didn't notice.
Yeah, no, so it's a late script that's come in. Let's see what they want old Jim Nance to say.
Do tell.
Hello, friends. Does the enchanting scent of those towering Georgia pines and those seductively alluring azaleas not quite do it for you anymore? Do those soothing southern breezes not quite stiffen your gentle man part like they used to? Does Amen Corner actually make you look for salvation anywhere but in the bedroom? Then reach for physician-approved Hardigan, the power enhancement you need for your number one club. Hardigan, so you can drive that little stinger of yours right in the hole. Ask your physician, then get ready to say, hello, friend, all over again.
That's outstanding. That's a great job. You came up with that today?
When you get paid the big bucks.
Oh man, I'm thrilled with that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Was that like Doobie Open induced? Like, were you thinking about this at the Doobie Open, or is this just clean and sober?
It's
the fabulous T-shirt.
Thank you, Hardigan. I mean, we couldn't do the show without you.
Your number one club. I like it. Your number one club. Get ready to say hello to your little friend. I love it. All right. So now we're moving on here in the Daily Upper Deckers podcast. That qualifies as our coverage of the 2017 Masters. And I myself couldn't be happier with this year's coverage.
It's our most extensive ever, actually. So
the funniest thing since Dallas Buyers Club. It just outstanding.
I didn't really know it was coming in that script.
That's good. That's almost good. Because otherwise you might try to hit the right chord or something like that. It's better when you're just reading it for the first time.
Terrible to be professional. I know.
Well, now you get to be a professional. You actually get to be. You might have to go run over and get the gavel.
Oh, I had all sorts of argument. I mean, I'm. Just
or do you want? Do you want to be the? Do you want to be the counsel?
Maybe a little role change. Yeah,
we'll I like it.
Maybe
all right.
Justin should be the judge.
So you're Judge Justin Gilbert. So what's going to happen here, ladies and gentlemen, in Tishon's favorite segment, the pile?
I think you can do that. That's
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Not too hard though. You know.
So this is the pile. Where we go through, and believe me, there's never a shortage of athletes getting arrested. Surprisingly, just still, it doesn't matter how many athletes get arrested, they just keep doing it. It
doesn't America's matter. America's pastime, yes.
America's pastime, athletes getting arrested. So, again, we had a plethora of athletes get arrested over the last couple of weeks. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read part of the story, or at least just set it up for you. The fabulous Tishon is going to defend these clients, and then you have to make a ruling. Whether or not it's like send him to the chair or lethal injection, whatever. Are they still putting people in the electric chair?
If not, they should bring it back.
I think so. They
should too. I think nowadays, like lethal injection is too nice. I'd say no water on the electric chair either.
And it worked in the Green Mile, so yeah.
I feel like really? In Texas, they think the chair is too comfortable. So I think they're like, I think they just go like poison to the veins there. I don't.
You know, that's how like the vibrating sex chair was created on like an electric chair. Was like defaulting or like not defaulting, just
yeah, malfunctioning.
Malfunctioning, yeah, malfunctioning yeah, is yeah. The word. So, and it was in Texas in 1887.
Wow.
It's like a Sibian or like in London? Like, what are we talking about?
What are the boards popped up? No, I'm full of shit. It sounded good, I thought.
Einstein was there. And
Einstein was there. He was -6. Yeah. All right, so moving on here in the
pile. Nothing like the truth.
The pile.
Well, this is the truth, and I'm so happy that this is the truth right here. First up here in the pile, it's Micah Parker and Lawrence Moore. Now, Micah Parker was a former Oklahoma cheerleader who was arrested for prostitution, while Lawrence Moore was her pimp. So it's actually a crazy story in that, like, they posted an ad on Backpage?
Backpage,
So they posted an ad, and then I can't believe this doesn't happen more often, where an undercover cop just goes on there and says, okay. So they met up, exchanged the $200, and then, boom, they both got arrested. So the fabulous Tishon, defend your clients.
I think this is a clear case of just a couple of entrepreneurs prepping for this next season of Shark Tank. I think this is just these are college educated young people. Incidentally, let's not overlook that. Like they've been in the realm of a school vicinity, so they're just applying what they know. And I think this is a mistake. You know, obviously that was a trial run. They're getting ready for their big moment. And I think it's actually a little unfortunate that they're not actually going to get a chance for the whole nation to see what they have to offer as a business enterprise.
I would have actually gone with I like the Shark Tank one. That's hysterical. I would have actually even thrown in that it was their thesis. This was part of their thesis.
Oh, college thesis. Right. I mean, we can add that, too, to the defense.
Everyone had to pull a website out of the hat. They got Backpage.
They're like, shit, okay, you know, we'll make it work. Plus, we can get enough money for a kegger.
I personally think it's a great defense. Judge Justin Gilbert, how do you rule?
I'm going to go pretty lenient on this one. I'm going to give them 200 hours of community service and then have them get an internship at the Moonlight Bunny Ranch where they could learn the full business and do it in a legal
Oh, I see. Oh, you're going to help them learn as well. No, that's extremely.
They just need guidance. Backpage is not guidance. They need guidance. Dennis Hoff is guidance.
I'm going to give them 200. He's a television star, for Christ's sake.
200 hours.
Yeah. I'm going to give them 200 hours of community service. The first hour, Micah will be at my place.
For starters. I'm going to be early on the schedule.
I like it. Right, I think
good.
It's a fair
Thank
ruling.
You, Judge.
Fair ruling.
Thank
yeah.
you. I agree with you.
All right. Moving on here in the pile. Next up is Louis Delmas. Mm. I believe that's how you pronounce it. He's the former Lions and Dolphins safety who was arrested for resisting arrest without violence after he kept yelling at an officer who was administering a sobriety test to his friend who was driving. So apparently the officer's like trying to do the sobriety test and the dude just starts yelling at him and they're like, hey man, you got to stop. And he's like, no, he just keeps yelling anyway. And then they were like, okay, if you yell one more time, you're getting arrested. And he just wouldn't shut up or keep doing what he just kept doing what he was doing and so, ended up getting arrested.
Right. So here's the real issue here. This is a full mistaken identity. Like this happens to Louis Delmas all the time, right? Like he's just a French Canadian who is, you know, he's just come down. Like, look, I mean, he's just beyond the border. He lives, he's French Canadian, lives in Windsor, Ontario, just across from Detroit. And poor Louis Delmas, he gets mistaken for this guy, like this, and you know, this violent. I mean, there's nothing about this report that I like. But I, you know, my client is a different man.
Would you give that defense if he saw his mugshot?
Louis, comment ça va? Yeah,
this is a mugshot. If you haven't looked at it, Delmas is spelled D-E-L-M-A-S. Lewis is L-O-U-I-S.
Louis Delmas. The S is, if everyone knows who speaks French, the S's are silent in French.
Louis so. Delmas. I don't think this guy's French. If you look at his mugshot online, it looks like he's smiling. He knows that he's got a good lawyer.
I was not aware
of
this
evidence. He's got
the
fabulous T-Sean, and he knows that he's getting him off on this shit.
I was not aware that there was some visual evidence of the...
these charges ain't going to stick kind of
Louis Delmas.
Right.
Judge, what do we think? Mistaken identity.
Any... Frenchmen, you're going to have a sense of arrogance with them.
Oh, this is true.
We just don't like them in general. And if you figure you played for the Lions and Dolphins, that's a red flag right there.
Dude, but, terrible franchise.
But nothing too crazy. So we'll make them 6 months in like a...
At the Bunny Ranch?
No.
Oh, no, we can't go back there.
That's a reward.
6 months working at like a sanitation plant in Michigan.
Oh, okay, in Flint, maybe.
Flint, yeah.
Yeah, in Flint.
I shouldn't suggest that. Auburn Hills. Put him in Auburn Hills.
It's almost like the trial by combat in Game of Thrones. It's like if you can go up to Flint, Michigan and drink one full glass of tap water without shitting your pants in 90 minutes.
You're free.
You must be innocent.
I would drink that water. I could not do. You know what I couldn't? A full glass of milk. I still can't drink. An adult. I can't drink.
Really?
I can drink chocolate milk. I can eat cereal with milk.
Did you do like the milk challenge or something at one point
system? I wouldn't do it. So I would rather drink the Flint water than a glass of
than
milk.
A glass of milk?
Yeah, it creeps me out.
It's like a regular pint of milk? Or?
It's like you and Rudy Giuliani, like the anti-milk campaign.
Just fill any glass, I'm just like.
It's about like almond milk or.
I'm more prone to drinking that,
He's
even though I like it.
He's got a peanut allergy, but he'll drink it.
Yes, the old almond milk peanut demise.
All right. Well, that might sound like we've got 55 minutes of why the fabulous T-Sean hates milk. We
what
got
about
55
like
minutes.
A glass of Kate Upton's breast milk.
You'd have to do it.
We're getting warmer.
All right, guys, it's time to move on to my favorite segment here at the Daily Upper-Decker. It's time for another game of Fact or Fudge.
Fact or fudge?
Hey, guys, the MLB season started earlier this week. Like I said, the Cubs are 500. Congratulations. It's all right they lose the first one.
Yeah.
It was so crazy today. The Indians came back. They were down 6-4 in the ninth, and the Rangers brought in their closer, Sam Dyson, and he was all over the place. Bases loaded, walks a guy, so it's 6-5. Frankie Lindor comes up, hits a grand slam, so now the Indians are 9-6, and they cut to a grown woman in a Texas Rangers shirt crying. She literally had her head in her hands crying because they ended up losing the game, and I think she knew it at that point they were going to lose. But it's like, this is not game three of the ALCS. This is game three of 162, lady. And the only thing that we could come up with is that she's probably on the rag. That's the only thing we can come up with. Why would someone be crying during game three of 162?
That's some good sports casting.
Well, and speaking of those Texas Rangers, it leads us to our fact or fudge question because Rougned Odor, which, you know, short could be rough odor. This is not his brother down at the Dominican Academy, the one that was accused of sexually assaulting a minor, jerking him off, and he called it hazing. So he has the same name as his brother down there, but this is the Texas Rangers second baseman, Rougned Odor. He signed a six-year, $49.5 million contract extension with the Rangers last week that not only netted him all that cash, but it netted him two horses. So it was just a crazy thing. Like, John Hart had some horses up on his phone, and he's like, and we'll give you these two horses. And that was like, that sealed the deal. He was like, okay. So $49.5 million over the next 6 years plus these two horses. And I was like, okay. Wow, that's a pretty weird...
Yeah, that's an interesting throw-in.
Contract, you know, deal right there. So I was like, all right, let's do a fact or fudge question where it goes something like this. Was this really part of a sports contract or not?
Got it.
So if it is, it's fact. If it's not, if you don't think it is, it's fudge.
That's good shit. Okay.
All right, here we go. Number one, Justin Gilbert. Bobby Bonilla collects roughly $1.19 million every July 1st from now through 2035. From now through 2035.
I'm going to go fact.
That is a fact. It's the Bobby Bonilla day. It's unbelievable. So back in like in 2000.
I remember this. I don't remember how I remember that, but I remember that being something.
Yeah, it was crazy. So they needed, the Mets needed that money. They needed the $10 million that he was going to be owed. So they turned it into like, this ridiculous thing that was like, fine, we'll pay you starting in like 2012. We're going to pay you $1.19 million all the way through 2035. Bobby Bonilla was like, okay, that's great. I mean, I don't know what happens if he dies, because I don't remember Bobby Bonilla being in the best shape like ever in his playing career.
Never.
But yeah, so every July 1st, it's Bobby Bonilla Day.
Wow. No, I, okay. That's a,
you didn't know that.
Great for him. No, I would have said you're going to try and lure me into agreeing with that, but I would have maybe gone the other way.
Well, and it's not going to be one of those things where it's like, I'm sorry, no, it's actually $1.18 million. So it's nothing that's like, is it egregious again?
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, let's keep using that.
Yeah, it's nothing that egregious. So here, there's actually, we don't usually give ESPN credit. This is how the deal came to be. It says, blah, 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 blah. Bonilla's agent, Dennis Gilbert, was an insurance agent at the same time he developed into a super agent where he repped Bonilla, Barry Bonds, Jose Canseco, and Danny Tartable. The Mets owed Bonilla $5.9 million. $5.9 million for the 2000 season and no longer wanted him. So the club negotiated with Gilbert to attach an 8% annual interest rate to that money. With a clock starting in 2000, that adds up to $29.8 million instead of just giving him $5.9 million at the time. The first installment of the payout came on July 1st, 2011, and the Mets will pay their, they paid their sixth installment this past year. The Mets have never really talked about the deal, but it is well known that their owners, the Wilpons, had many accounts with investor Bernie Madoff. Madoff was returning 12 to 15% a year in what we now know were fictional returns. So deferring deals wasn't a problem because the payout would occur years later, and at that interest rate, it would be lower than the money they were actually getting back from Madoff, even though that money didn't exist.
There's the plot twist
why they
right
did
there.
It. Yeah, that's huge. I remember reading that it's just unbelievable.
Rich people know what they're doing, man.
Apparently not. So that's how $5.9 million that was owed to him in 2000 turned into, you know, $1.19 million every July 1st through 2035.
It's a pretty sweet gig for him, though.
It's amazing. It's a great deal. All right, so moving on here in Fact or Fudge. Are you ready for this, buddy? All right, T-Sean. Kurt Schilling once agreed to random weigh-ins because the team he signed with thought he was going to become a fat fuck.
Which team was that?
I can't tell you that.
Oh. Was it Philly? I mean, there's a lot of fucking fat foods in Philly.
I can't tell you that.
It must be Philly. I would be worried about peeps living in Philly. You can gain some fucking weight in Philly. They got good grub.
I've been there.
Yeah, they got good grub there.
It's not GTL for everybody.
What does that mean?
Gym tanning and laundry, yeah. Jersey Shorts, where everyone goes from Philadelphia in the summer.
Oh, I see. This was in his clause.
His clause. Like, he agreed to random weigh-ins.
Okay. What was the weight supposed to be at?
I don't even know. I can't tell you because maybe I made it up. Maybe I didn't.
Ah, so it starts to sound more like you've made it up. You don't know the team. You don't know the weight. I'm saying bullshit.
That is incorrect. When the Boston Red Sox re-signed 41-year-old Curt Schilling to a one-year $8 million deal before the 2008 season, they wanted to make sure he didn't let himself go in his older age. Instead of telling him to work with a trainer and taking Schilling's word for it, the Red Sox wanted it in writing, so they made him agree to six random weigh-ins, all of which carried a $333,333 price tag, adding up to nearly $2 million if he made weight. Schilling wound up missing the entire season with a shoulder injury, which led to his retirement.
Same contract that Bartolo Colon got.
Is it really? No. Well, Bartolo Colon actually, in his last contract with the Mets, now he pitches for the Braves, and the Braves won tonight. And it was his first performance with the Braves, and the Mets fans gave him a standing ovation. They loved that dude.
Yeah.
But he had a clause in his contract that if he won the Silver Slugger Award, you'd get $500,000. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen Bartolo Colon hit, but it's basically like me trying to, is it the Kama Sutra?
He has like one.
It's basically like me trying to do that. It's not good.
It's one career home run he has.
Yeah, of like an unbelievably good pitcher.
Kama Sutra.
Like Kama Sutra. Kama.
There is karma, but it's.
Maybe that's why I've been doing it wrong. All right, so we've got one for Justin Gilbert, one for the fabulous T-Shawn. Still anybody's game. Here we go.
Wait a minute.
Was this really part of a contract or not? Sid Bream's deal with the Atlanta Braves wasn't finalized until he proved that he was HIV negative.
I don't know who this person is.
You don't know who Sid Bream is? 1992 NLCS? Barry Bonds couldn't throw him out. He was like the big, tall, gleepy, white first baseman.
All right. Now, I thought it was like a current day thing. All right. I'm going to say fudge.
That is correct. Sid Bream never had that part of his deal. Atlanta's a dirty town. Dirty town. But
and dudes named Sid don't tend to be squeaky clean.
They're either all or nothing. It's either, hey, there's Sid the Virgin.
Or he's like, yeah, he's Ned Flanders, or he's just a total wild man, I guess.
It's either Sid the Virgin or Sid the Rapist. It's either way, man. It's just one.
It's always
one
interesting
the
way you look at things.
Thank you. All right, so it's 2 for Justin Gilbert, 0 for the fabulous T-Shawn. Remember, both players still have their pullout. T-Shawn. A soccer player in Wales was told that his contract would not be finalized unless he promised to eat sheep balls.
There's many a time where there's been no deal at stake where Welshmen have eaten sheep balls. So it's kind of a weird one.
And you're making fun of the way I think.
I'm 11% Welsh, so let's see here. We'll go with crock of shit.
No, that is actually correct.
God damn it.
That is actually correct.
My logic actually pointed me in the way of answering this correctly, too. That's amazing.
Cardiff City owner Sam Hammam, who instead wrote in Spencer Pryor's contract that the player had to eat sheep testicles before suiting up and joining the team. In reality, Pryor was served chicken, but he didn't know that until after he ate what he thought were the private parts of a sheep, seasoned with lemon and parsley.
Mom was
testing his commitment to the team.
Right. No, it's kind of a sort of a gentle seasoning, actually. They really wanted to let the real flavor come through. It's an interesting preparation.
If you care about this team in this city, you will eat those sheep balls right there. Eat them. It's like grapes. All right. It's a big one for you right here. If you get this, it's pretty much out of reach. If not, T-Shawn's still in the game.
Are there not enough questions?
No, there are 10, okay. But I'm just saying it's getting to that point. The Oakland A's once paid every player on their team with a mustache an extra $300.
It would have been the 80s.
Carney Lansford.
I'm going to go fudge.
That is actually fact. Raleigh Fingers in the early 1970s Oakland A's When Reggie Jackson showed up in spring training in 1972 with a mustache, which was rare in the sport during that era, eccentric team owner Charlie Finley saw an opportunity. He agreed to give $300 to every member of the A's with a mustache who made the opening day roster. That inspired Raleigh Fingers' famous handlebar mustache, which he still waxes today. That's good. All right, so that's a big one for Tyshawn.
Well, that's
only
great.
2-0.
I was getting concerned. I thought I might have to bring in John Higgins to fucking fuck shit up here and help me out.
That's a great callback. Great callback. Tyshawn, an Astros pitcher was once given a bulldozer because he won a postseason game.
Of course.
You're saying that's fact?
Of course.
That is fact.
Oh,
October of 2005
nothing
is a good
could
month
be
for
more
Roy
true.
Oswalt.
Yeah, that's straight
Roy
out of
Oswalt. Oswalt. He pitched the Houston Astros into the World Series and in the process earned something he always wanted, a bulldozer.
That's pretty amazing. That's like the kid from Blue Chips that got the
tractor. Right. It was a kid's dad that got the tractor.
Well, technically, right.
But yeah, but he got a
won $30,000 in cash and a tractor from my dad's farm.
Yeah. No, all right. That was awesome.
All right, you're back in the game.
Well,
you're
thanks,
back in the game.
Of course I am.
How about this one? An Astros pitcher once asked for and got 37 boxes of Jell-O as part of his deal.
There's no way. I'm going to say fudge.
That is incorrect. It's fact. The guy's name was Charlie Kerfield. Astros pitcher Charlie Kerfield was known for his Lucky Jetsons t-shirt, but that wasn't the only weird quirk he had. Kerfield had a sort of obsession with the number 37, his jersey number, so much that when it came time to sign a new contract in 1987, he agreed on $110,037.37 and 37 boxes of orange Jell-O.
This game has taken a turn.
I knew this was true.
This is it right here.
Okay.
This is huge. If Tyshawn gets this, the game goes on. If he doesn't, Justin Gilbert is your winner.
What? Even though he just missed?
Correct. Because he's up 2-1. This is the big one right here. Right. Remember, you can use your pullout too. So he can pull out on you, which means that you have to answer the question. If you get it correct, the game's over, you win. If you would get it wrong, then he would get the point.
Talk about odd quirks.
Yeah. The fabulous Tyshawn, a Seahawks quarterback, once had a clause that guaranteed him $15 million even if the world came to an end.
Who?
A Seahawks quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, some of these questions really do lack the specifics I tend to really kind of grind on. I will go with true.
That is a fact. That is a fact. So we are tied at two. The quarterback's name, Rick Meyer.
Rick Meyer, yeah.
Rick Meyer.
Fucking Notre.
That's who I was thinking, too.
He hangs with Terry Ewells.
To make sure the team didn't take advantage of him, Meyer worked out a clause that said he would be paid $15 million over 5 years under any conditions, even the end of the world.
That's pretty great. That's pretty, you know, he actually, if he was Richard Mireille, he would hang with Louis Dalma. Just bringing it all back. Everyone's hanging out with everyone.
All right, here we go. True, fact, false, fudge. Fact or fudge. So it's a tiebreaker. So whoever says the correct answer first
wins. Oh, this is a blur out?
Here it is. Okay. Yep. Mickey Mantle's third Yankees contract yielded him one room at the Waldorf Astoria with one pack of Winston's, 12 cans of Schlitz, and a $70 room service credit after every home game.
True.
That is incorrect. It is fudge, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
I got specific.
What'd I tell you, Justin? You know, don't fuck with me.
Collapse like the Indians right there.
You're new. No. It is. Actually, the Indians collapsed in the World Series. I read you. All right. I thought you were talking about game three of the 162 games. It's like, no, the Rangers.
I'm crying. Yeah.
So the fabulous Tyshawn, you are the new champion here. Remember, you can find
us. As it should be.
You can find us every day online at dailyupperdecker.com, on Facebook, and on Twitter at Daily Upper Deck. Gentlemen, any parting thoughts heading into this this weekend? Masters, Cubs, Brewers. God, so many things going on.
So many, yeah. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Dustin Johnson will... possibly number one player in the world, the favored to win, when maybe doesn't even get to play. And so John Rahm, out of nowhere, might be the winner. Yeah, put your money on him, folks. There we go.
Is that a real player?
Yeah.
John Rahm?
John Rahm from Spain.
He's got to be an Urban Dictionary. That's a new factor, Fudge. Is this a golfer on a professional tour, or is this like an Urban Dictionary sex move?
John Ram.
The Daily Upper Decker. Nothing but sports and crap.